My name is Laura Bayless. I'm an associate educator in the Department of Education here at MoMA. And I'd like to welcome you to the first session of our fall 2006 series of conversations with contemporary artists, which are made possible by an endowment established by the Junior Associates of the Museum of Modern Art. The series, which began in 1993, will host three contemporary artists this fall: Yuri Mazny tonight, Barry Whitmill of Free Play Energy on November 3rd, and Trisha Donnelly on November 10th. And I hope you'll be able to join us. If not, I'd like to draw your attention to our website, which is moma.org/audio, and actually all of our program proceedings, our recordings, are available online. This evening, I have the pleasure of introducing you to Yuri Mazny. Yuri, whose primary media are works on paper and sculptural installations, was born in 1976 in Washington, D.C., and received his BFA from the Cooper Union in 1998. Represented by Metro Pictures Gallery in Chelsea, he has exhibited in New York as well as in Los Angeles, Madrid, and Frankfurt, and has most recently been included in the 2006 Whitney Biennial. Yuri will present his work and then take questions from the audience. So please join me in welcoming Yuri Mazny.
Thank you, and thanks everybody for coming. I wanted to start with these drawings that are kind of old. Well, they're old for me. It's this period of drawings that I was making from 2000 to roughly 2002. And part of the reason I want to show them is just the nature of how I was making work and showing work. Not many of these drawings were seen. It was the early part of my, I started making them before I had any kind of career in showing artwork in galleries. So they just ended up kind of getting dispersed without ever really being in shows. This first drawing, basically I used drawing as a kind of a diary format. Some artists use writing as a diary format. Some artists use other ways of some artists use photography as a way to kind of understand what they're thinking about, to create a relationship between their thoughts and what they want to make artistically. So I was really, really interested in the idea of using drawing. And at the time, I didn't really have means to make my work. I didn't have much of a studio. I worked out of my apartment, and coming off of being a student, basically, where you have a studio and you have all of these facility to make artwork, and then going into the real life not having any kind of a studio or any way to, you have to have a job to then make your work after work. So I wanted to strip down everything that I had learned from school and use a very, very simple method of working. So I chose the most simple tools I could think of, but I didn't really want to use traditional art making tools for whatever reason. So I just chose, ballpoint pen and paper. It was just I don't want to buy a lot of stuff. I don't want to make these elaborate ideas. I just want to create this way of working that is very direct and immediate. So I started making drawings that were a kind of silly reflection of my own life, or the way I was interpreting it, living in New York. And I had a job delivering artwork, which was basically the best graduate school program for art. You learn more about the art world, and you learn more about contemporary art if you're open to it while you're delivering art. So I was having this kind of now that I look back on it, it was this kind of silly romanticism, where I was kind of taking things that I had seen over the course of the day, furniture or whatever that appealed to me, and then coming home after work and making these very quick drawings that I thought somehow reflected my daily experience and combined all those things in a way that appealed to me. I never imagined even showing them. I never imagined in a million years I'd be showing them in front of all of you guys here. So I was using those ballpoint pen. There's whiteout or correction fluid, and as it seems to be, other people write it as correction fluid. I don't know why. And I was making these, these romanticized interiors, and I was choosing I was doing a lot of work delivering, and we were coming across all of these Cy Twombly's all the time, and I thought that they would just be like, this is my way of having one, was kind of like making it into this artwork. So at the same time I was having these thoughts and drawing in this way, I was thinking about how New York is just a string of like elaborate interiors. And definitely my life at the time was elaborate interiors. Like delivering artwork is just going from one interior space to another interior space. And I kind of have this thing where I think about New York as there is no outside, there's no nature. It's just it's objects against objects. And you can't ever be in the field really. Like Central Park, you might have an open space, but everything is totally chosen, and in a way it's so designed that it becomes an interior space. So the work that I was making in college, I had been romanticizing landscape space. And now I started to think, like, is there a way that I can take this idea of landscape space and translate it into my experience from delivering artwork and my daily experience and all my personal experiences and my way of viewing Manhattan and turn it into these, like, landscapes? So I started making these, like, long panoramic images. And they're kind of hard to see in this long version, so I made some close-ups. And I was thinking of, like, what is the most, like, stereotypical, almost, like, children's version of a landscape? It's basically, like, what defines Western landscape is the horizon line. So I wanted to just make these images that were basically a horizon line and the sky above it and the floor below it. So then I was using all of these artworks and layering them on top of one another and treating them. I was kind of thinking of this as like a sky, or a cloudy sky, which then lends itself to a kind of metaphor. Like, what does it mean once you start using all of these artworks and appropriating all these images and turning them into some kind of a sky form? And the latter, I put it in there because I thought it would be funny. So this is another like kind of interpretation of architecture, or just this endless cabinet, this like dilapidated cabinet. And I started to get carried away with the ballpoint pen and the whiteout. And part of the reason for using it was I was like, I have this obsession with correction and doing things over and over and over again. And I thought I would loosen up with ballpoint pen. But what ended up happening is it just got carried away with the whiteout. So the whiteout just like over time just starts to appear more and more. And I was collaging everything together to as another like layer of correction. This is kind of like an art handler's worst nightmare. At the same time, it was kind of like the job, the work was really satisfying because I was not the artwork, but my own day job was really satisfying because I was working with friends and we were able to like talk about what we were doing. But this was some kind of weird way to kind of make it better. It's kind of like somehow I could take everything that I had seen over the course of the day and just, make it into something special out of something mundane. So this is another, and I was also like fascinated with the idea of like graffiti. Like I both hate and love graffiti at the same time. Like, it's an interesting way that everyone can, like, people can leave their mark on a place, but it's also really ugly. And I also like that it's a layering of styles. It's like somebody develops a style, and another person comes along and layers their new style on top of it. So with these images, I was also thinking about some of that, like, just this layering of style. And also going from gallery to gallery every day, delivering, you see the style war that's going on between artists. I was thinking about it in those terms. So these are some more of the smaller ones, but they're a little bit like further along. They're not as rough as the earlier ones, and I'm starting to refine them a little more. Here the correction fluid is getting carried away. I also had this idea, you know, it's like I love in New York going into people's apartments, and you can tell so much about the person from time to time by what they have up. And I would constantly go into people's spaces and see their world without them. And it was kind of funny to sort of try to interpret, like, how could somebody's objects and the things they own kind of be an expression of their personality? So I kind of was thinking about this friend of mine who really wanted to be a musician, but he really didn't know how to play guitar at all. So he always just put his guitar into a pedal and would just, like, make all these effects. And I was trying to make a room for this guy. And so this is kind of the drawing that I made thinking of him. And this is another kind of fictitious room just, like, filled with some kind of pathetic artworks. The thing is that, I mean, I might use the word pathetic, but I also love it at the same time. Like, and I don't love it in an ironic way. I just thought that, like, there's something kind of special when artworks are together and they're not particularly, they're not so displayed like in a museum. They're displayed in someone's house. And this is another drawing kind of for that same friend who couldn't really play music very well. But he would also, you know, be the kind of person who would say that, like, he would say things like, "I'm so obsessed with math right now." So, this is another, you know, these are, so it's like all the same theme, basically, these cabinets that can, I like to think of cabinets as being like a perfect, you know, it's like you have an apartment that's a vessel, or a room that's a vessel for maybe a personality. And then a cabinet can be kind of the same thing. Can be you walk into somebody's house and they have their display cabinet in their living room, and it has these mementos of these things that are supposed to kind of capture their life. So I was trying to capture somebody's life. And this is just another kind of installation from the day. The very early drawings like this, everything is pretty fixed. Like, the imagery is fixed and the objects are fixed and nothing is moving. But I started to get really dissatisfied with this idea that I was just making these kinds of, like, real interpretations of my own life. And I thought there needed to be something a little bit more fantastical and a little bit more imaginative. So I thought that things should start coming apart and be a little bit more, I'm making a drawing, so why does it have to be so real? So I started to loosen it up a little bit. And this is a total, like, celebration of, like, the worst day. Like, it's like somebody calls you and tells you they need you to move, like, 6 boxes and, you know, some boards and maybe a bottle of wine as a gift. It's like I just was really, really trying to make the most of it. And also, like, I thought, like, by heightening up the romanticism a little bit, like, why, and again, like, why do things need to be so real? Like, you know, a lot of album covers or record covers have just some abstract form on it. But I started to just really strip the objects down and give them less, try to make them even less descriptive, but the shape of them would just kind of tell you more or less what it was. Those are all the ballpoint pen, exclusively ballpoint pen drawings I'm showing. I kind of stopped working in that material because my life sort of changed, and also I was getting tired of the medium overtaking the imagery. Like, I found it was a fear that I inherently had about it, but I also felt that, like, I would get, like, all the time comments like, "Oh, you're the guy who makes drawings in ballpoint pen. Cool." Or like, "Oh, those ballpoint pen ones, man, cool." Like, it never felt like anybody ever talked to me about what the drawings were about or whether the issues even interested them. It was always like just cool that I was using this medium and kind of elevating it, which just annoyed the shit out of me. So I started to draw in pencil, and just kind of it led to a different kind of refinement, which I didn't mind. It's just a different tool. You can use it in a different way, and it doesn't need it. Like, you can use it in a rough way, but I kind of liked the fact that I could use it in a much more sharp and direct, and like my line was being translated like immediately exactly how I wanted it. So I'm still working with the same themes. It's just it's getting even more fantasy. Like my personal life and the things I'm doing are starting to change. Like I'm starting to spend just a lot more time in the studio, and I'm starting to think a little bit about different things, and things just started to change. This drawing is kind of an important change. I'm still thinking about the idea of interior. I'm still thinking about interior as a vessel. But at the same time, it's just that I couldn't shake the fact that, basically we started to live in a very... I mean, I don't want to... It's difficult for me to talk about this, and it's difficult to describe. But the kind of level of anxiety I think New Yorkers started to feel about basically the political climate, the war culture we were living in, all of these issues started to creep into what I was doing and what I was thinking about. And I think they were on my mind, and I don't really have an explanation other than that to talk about some of these drawings where I'm trying to use... this drawing is a kind of reflection of how I'm having a very hard time reconciling the fact that I'm making these artworks about these interiors and that are so so about my own life, and yet there's a very unsettling anxiety that's just in the air, and I didn't really know how to deal with it. So I was making drawings that kind of reflected that anxiety. So these still lives are just even more like elaborate kind of taking a part of the room and reworking it. I mean, this is a total this is thinking about basically like going out and partying and having like a great time and then coming home and listening to the news like at 4 a.m. when you're sitting in your apartment after hanging out. It's just this kind of weird, it's a weird duality that we're living in, where we're living in a place where there's so much violence being talked about, but there's very little violence that's in our face. It's just kind of, it's just a real disconnect. And I'm appropriating the Guernica images, the images from Picasso's painting, because I thought that painting is a real benchmark for certain artists. It's a benchmark because, I mean, for those of you who know that painting, it's really an expression of a horrible event that somehow rallied people around and gave art the kind of significance that... that people hoped that it had. And I think that people look at that painting and they're still like, wow, like art can deal with a serious subject and kind of move people. And at the same time, it's also totally ridiculous. Like, the reason I started using these images is it was like sometime around September 11th, and I was walking down 7th Street, and there was like a poster like on foam core of the painting, just like stuck in a trash, like sticking halfway out of a trash can. And I was kind of thinking like, huh, like here isn't like this image, this like this total war image. And then it's just kind of like discarded in this way. And I totally understood like somebody kind of wanted to throw it away because they didn't want it anymore. But then they also didn't feel comfortable crumpling it up and putting it in the bag. They thought someone might want to like take it home. So I started like thinking, I still think about that painting because it comes up as a source of conflict like all the time in my mind. So and I'm like working through that conflict in some of these drawings. And I'm also still making these like long panoramic ones that are kind of roughening up. So this is a total like, I was just thinking of a very, like it's the room you could almost find in the museum, you know, or a gallery, or even an apartment. It's just like what defines a room, just besides these two like stupid lines that define a hallway, and then all of this kind of like thought debris or thought, this imagery that was kind of, you know, because I was also looking at other artists a lot to try to figure out what, how to deal with some of these issues. Like, how have other artists in the past tackled like such moments of, you know, of war, basically? How have they dealt with it? And I guess because it was so much on my mind, and I didn't really have a good resolution, I didn't really have a good answer for it, I just kind of thought, well, this is exactly how I'm thinking. Like, at any moment, you know, this could kind of blast out of the corner. And yeah, this drawing is called Screw You, Peekaboo. So this is another, like, now the pan, like, I'm just obsessed a little bit now with this, like, storm idea. And, you know, the idea of the interior is becoming less and less important. And abstract, these abstract images and these abstract gestures are becoming more important. And I thought it was interesting that if you give, you could look at this drawing and you could think of someone like Cy Twombly, and he's making these paintings that are really gestural, and there's all this gestural abstraction, and there's all this drawing. But at the same time, they read in two ways. There's a certain kind of, for lack of any other word, they're kind of bullshit on certain levels. Like, I find when I look at his paintings, I just look at them as a bunch of scribbles, because they're not, you know, they don't move me to want to believe it. I still see the artist just making the thing. And I guess by like putting these gestural marks and containing them in a room, I thought that the marks then have a different kind of content. They have a level of content that they wouldn't have if they were just on a blank canvas and there was no room. At the time, I really needed the fact that the room was still a vessel for this. This drawing, like, there's a series of a few drawings I was doing like this. I'm still trying to let go of the room, or just like deal with thinking about it. And I just wanted to bring it back to, like, you know, I made this drawing and I was thinking, like, what defines like an artist studio? What defines an artist space? An artist space is defined by, you know, what is like an icon that says an artist at work or something. And it's totally like sawhorses and a piece of plywood. So, you know, I kind of wanted to just, you know, I always loved those drawings and paintings and depictions of artist studios in the past. And I was kind of trying to think of like what my situation was. Like, how could I simplify it how could I make it the most simple? So here you have the same, you know, drawing table and drawing wall, but you have this kind of like storm of debris, you know, flying through the room. So I decided to take a tangent, and the tangent lasted longer than I thought it was going to. I kind of had been thinking so much about interiors, they didn't really feel valid to me anymore. And I felt like, There's got to be a way to kind of, at least in my mind, revitalize abstraction. Like, how could I bring, because abstraction is really relevant to me. It's not relevant. There's a lot of artists who work nowadays, and they don't really, I don't know, but they don't really find abstraction that relevant, but I find it extremely relevant. And I mean, like, geometric abstract form. And the reason I find it relevant is because, being someone who was born in 76, like, the late 70s and the 80s are all about abstract form. They're all, like, abstraction comes up everywhere in our daily lives. It's like, it was in graphics, it was in clothes, it was in computer games. Like, all of a sudden, like, these simple geometric forms just kind of inundated our lives. So I think about geometric abstraction in a really nice way. It's not cold to me. It's not uninviting. Like it's something that has a real evocative emotional power. Where sometimes people look at geometric abstraction from the 70s and they find it just really cold and really decorative. Like it's and I don't really know if it's like a nostalgia or it's like growing up with a thing or whatever, but I find it really, really appealing. I've always found it appealing. So I started to think about how could I express this form of anxiety that I was feeling and turn it into an abstract drawing of or a relatively, well, there's things that are, some of the objects in these drawings are drawings of real things, but how could I create this kind of abstract, unreal space? Like, how could I make this place that more represents a thought and is not like how in the earlier drawings is really obviously a contained thought. So a lot of the things you're going to see in these drawings is like these, it's a kind of, I thought of them as collisions. People talk about them as explosions, but I kind of thought that might be too, I don't see them that way. I didn't draw them that way. It becomes kind of a literal reference to maybe things going on. I mean, that's not really what I was thinking about. I was thinking about how could I basically make these really, really anxious moments by colliding all of these objects together. And in this like sort of this unreal space, because I'm making a drawing, anything is possible. Like you can have like typography can exist on the same level of importance as architectural elements. And I kind of had been seeing that. Like that's the sort of landscape of New York that I was thinking about, is that typography, like graphics and advertisements and construction and all of these things all exist together. And so I was trying to make these kind of, if that's a very, in real life, that's a very firm representation of a place. I was trying to just break them apart and put them into these kind of, into these collisions or these cycles that kind of interpreted the world the way I felt it, the way I saw it. So in this space also, like these painting references or these, you know, these, that's like another head from Guernica, like it can exist the same way that wall can exist, the same way that circular form that's kind of like a painting, it's kind of like a circle and a dot. It's like, you know, they can all exist together in this moment. This drawing I made on the first day that I had what I consider to be a real anxiety attack. I never really had one before. It wasn't really fun. But I was just really feeling so much anxiety that I basically took all of these things that I was thinking about and twisted them into this knot. So I titled it Tying the Anxiety Knot. And people have asked me how am I working on these drawings? Like how do I come up with the combinations of form? And what I do is I because I have this, I really like this idea of overlaying art histories and the fact that all images are up for grabs and that my own images mix in with that. I started creating these books that I have in my studio I have my own sketchbooks which are separate, and I make my own drawings and I just make tons of drawings in them and whatever I'm thinking about. And then I have books that I appropriate images in, or I appropriate typography, or I actually appropriate things. It's not an appropriation, but I look into my sketchbook and then I choose things out of the sketchbook and I add it into these books. And then I cut the pages apart and I start layering these things in. And that way I'm mixing my own language of imagery and some of these other appropriated ones in a way that kind of, I thought, kind of accurately satisfied like what I was trying to do. And the drawing sizes of these is like 48 inches to like 4 feet wide by 3.5 feet tall. You know, one of the things I was thinking a lot about was Philip Guston made these really interesting drawings of, like, you know, he had this kind of, like, thought debris climbing up these hills or climbing up these lines. And so I started to think about how, like, this world that I was developing was just made of these lines that these things were kind of riding on. So in that way, it was just this kind of, like, you know, this kind of like thought march. I didn't make very many in color, but I did make some. I bled the color out of them on purpose. I mean, I just didn't want to use color. I thought that it would be a lot more interesting and a lot easier on what I was trying to think about if they were in black and white, and they made more sense to me in black and white. It seemed like color kind of made them. At least when I started the first ones in color, there was too much kind of fun in the color that I couldn't really deal with. But I started to get it to a place that I was kind of happy with. And people have asked me a lot about the Russian constructivist references, and what I can say about that is I find that that art historical moment really interesting and really fascinating, and it appeals to me. But there isn't anything in particular that I'm trying to say about it. It's like I think that a lot of artists are afraid of looking back at other art historical moments and thinking about how they could apply nowadays. And I thought it was kind of interesting to think about it. I mean, those artists are really interesting for a lot of reasons. I mean, one of the things that always interested me about them was they were not the first, but some of the first artists to really think about how the forms that they developed, how they could translate into, translate onto and into the world of objects that wasn't art. And, in the same way that I was trying to think about how the graphics and the architectural materials and the art references could all mix together, they were the first ones to kind of think about it's more important to take their world of form and put it out into these objects. And in a way, I'm trying to gather them back and put them into a drawing. So I was thinking about what a different place I'm at and where I'm coming from, but still find what they were doing relevant and interesting. And also, they were at such a politically difficult moment. Like, their world was completely changing, so they were coming up with a new way that the world should be represented, this new world that they had thought about. And it was incredibly naive, but I still find it really interesting, and I still find it worth pursuing. I think there's a lot of artists who say that was naive, and then they kind of abandon it completely and say that that's just, you know, artists shouldn't do that, and that's just kind of pathetic. But I still like that that sort of feeling of optimism. I mean, I think it was a little maybe foolish on their part to get so involved in the politics without ever having an idea of what was really going on, but, you know, I'm not judging them in one way or another. Just interested in what they were doing. So this is another, like, these drawings also have this, again, this, like, feeling of marching. You know, you start to feel like I wanted to get this feeling of marching towards something, but we're not really sure what we're marching towards, and try to, like, describe it in this really abstract language, like, what are we all pushing towards? So, I mean, that's in, like, a very, like, absurd kind of way. And that little horseman guy is from the Jericho painting. I use that image later in another work, but it's from the painting that's called The Imperial Mounted Officer. And in the painting, that rider is on a mounted horse that's rearing back, and like behind him is just like death and destruction and like hell on earth. But when you look at his face, he's, like, so calm. Like, he's just chilling on this horse. And it's almost like he's got his sword like reaching back, but it's almost like he's backhanding somebody. Like he's scolding somebody as like hell on earth is taking place around him. So I kind of thought that it's such a ridiculous image. It's such a ridiculous painting that I kind of wanted to make him sort of riding this stuff, and also draw him in a very kind of silly way. This is like a much larger version of what I was doing. It's twice the size, so it's like almost twice the size. It's like 7 feet tall. So I kind of finished that tangent of thinking about the stuff out of a context. And I started to think to myself, it was kind of, how could I bring some of that debris back into this context and reevaluate it? And how could I, I started drawing these, like, diary drawings again and thinking about, you know, the artworks back in these environments, but also using some of the world of form that I had learned from by making those other drawings. And this is just like it's like a creepy note to myself or something. I had this like thought that like all of these, you know, it's like how do I take some of those art historical moments and then put them into my own context, because that's really what I realized that's what I'm doing. Like that's what I'm thinking about, that I'm developing this kind of invented world that this stuff can exist in. Like that's what I'm doing. Like that's what makes kind of visual artists relevant and unique, is that one of the things they can do is really make a world that doesn't exist, and that world that doesn't exist only exists in their drawings, and it reflects the nature of our own lives. So the text on the right, I mean, I wanted to make these kind of like banners or these blankets or these kind of something like a blanket that would kind of hang over this clothesline. And the text on the right-hand side is from a propaganda poster that I got out of an old book of propaganda posters that were, I think it was from a book that's a museum in Ukraine. And, you know, it's just this like ridiculous phrase. And then that, you know, that's basically like the bread is the strength and might of the nation. I mean, that's a rough translation of what it would be like. And it's just this kind of like this ideology like hung out to dry. And then the image on the left is from a Picasso costume that he designed for the Ballet Russe that was like on the chest of this kind of like Asian guy. This is supposed to be this kind of like Asian dancer. Japanese references come up in what I'm doing all the time, and people seem to always go towards the Russian constructivist, because it seems to be the most easy and the most direct, like something they see so quickly. But I had been thinking a lot about Japanese art and Chinese art, something that really appealed to me when I was in school, and something that really appeals to me still. I'm always looking at it in terms of like how they treated space and how that, because I don't really like Western conventions and like of how to draw space. So pretty much in every drawing, well, I mean, these aren't going to be reflective of it, but in the drawings of the past that I was showing you, that the perspective I'm using is more of an Asian type of perspective, where it's not converging lines. It's, you know, the lines are parallel or sometimes going away from one another, so they don't treat space the same way. And I'm now that I had kind of totally liberated, or at least in my mind, liberated the form from having to be representative of anything. I could use these kind of like abstract things. Like I could make this kind of goofy eyeball and make it kind of like a sculpture that kind of sits next to this pedestal and kind of combine those things together. I'm not sure what this drawing says about me. This is just another like example of how the other thing that's different about these interior drawings versus the ones earlier on is the perspective is much closer. Like in all the earlier drawings, you were backed up from the space and you weren't actually kind of in it. There's something about like especially Well, in both, more so in Japanese drawings, like I was looking at, or prints, like I was thinking about the 100 Views of Mount Fuji, Hokusai's book. In that book, and in his treatment of interior space, he's always, like, there's all these formal issues that I'm just so fascinated in. I'm so fascinated in how whenever they draw rooms, like, you're completely within the room, and I realize because the way the perspective is that they're using, you're not, you can't really draw, you'd have to draw the roof open, or you'd have to draw, like, a hole in the roof to see in. So I like that relationship to the way, what I was describing earlier about my relationship to living in New York, and how you're always in these spaces. I thought it was more important to get really inside the space. And this is the most recent drawing that's, you know, in the sort of the spirit of the other ones, but this is larger, so it's more work. There aren't that many that are yet that are that refined, but it's, I thought that it would be, thinking of this drawing, I keep thinking about these artworks and their relationship, you know, and this idea of 70s abstraction and the idea of abstract art and my relationship to it. And I always find that, like, when I go into a museum and I see an abstract painting, I may love it, but I always loved the feeling of looking at it in the room. And I always thought of, like, the artwork in a context created a whole nother layer of, like, the abstraction in and of itself is often really unemotional. And, you know, people talk about, like, Mark Rothko's and talk about how emotional they are. And I always look at them and they're very beautiful and I love the surface and I love the touch and I love the sensitivity. But there's no, I don't find an emotional content to them. I mean, they appeal to me, but I don't find an emotional content. And I was kind of thinking about how could I use that and make emotional content. Like, could I do it just by putting this artwork in this room? And then it just becomes kind of this strange juxtaposition and this really weird, this kind of weird painting in this dark room. Like, is the wall black or is the room really that dark? That kind of thing. And that's where I'm at with the drawing portion. This is the sculpture that I made for the Whitney Biennial. I don't have any other images of the sculptures I'm working on because I'm currently working on a lot of them and none of them are really ready to be shown. This piece, I specifically put that buffer of other images in of the interiors again because I don't see this sculpture as a kind of like, I wasn't trying to make one of my collisions. I was, like, to me, my drawings were, basically I make drawings to conjure up a world of form, but I didn't want to just, like, build one of my drawings. That's not the point. Like, if I'm going to make a sculpture, I'm going to make something sculptural. It has a whole different set of rules and criteria and things that are interesting about it. It's like a drawing does its own thing and sculpture is completely separate from that. The images, for some reason, don't really do the work justice. But what I was thinking about was how to translate... I was thinking about a lot of artists. I was thinking about a lot of sculptors from the 70s. I was thinking about a lot of, I was thinking about Richard Serra for some reason. I was thinking about his prop pieces where he would put one piece of steel on top of another piece of steel and just kind of balance it there. And I was thinking about how I wanted to use these wall forms. Like the two wall shapes are made the way a normal wall would be made, except the surface is totally covered in joint compound. It's like sanded to be really smooth and powdery white, and it has like a slight metallic, like a little bit of metallic in it, because that's just, there's like little mica chips in the joint compound. And then all of the other objects are made out of plaster, and they're cast plaster. Most of them that look like boards or something, they're in the same proportion of a 2x4, but it's cast out of plaster. And then some of the other objects in the piece, like the bottles are made out of wax, and then the artworks in the piece are just, you know, they're drawings on paper and frames. And I was, thinking about how do I think about, like, because I've been obsessed with this idea of landscape, and I've been obsessed with this idea of, like the collisions where you have the architecture, graphics, and artwork all together in the same composition. I was trying to think about a landscape form, so I was thinking of a wave. But I didn't really want to make a wave or make something that looked like a wave moving. I thought of, like, what happens when a wave pushes something up and then it recedes, and then it leaves the objects kind of propped in that place, and it leaves the objects fixed on one another. So it's kind of like the mirror or the negative image of a wave. It's hard to see in the photograph of the artwork, but there's a lot of drawing involved. The piece was called The Fine Line, and there's drawing that goes all over the outside of it, and there's drawing that goes, you know, up across it, and, like, you know, a lot of these... Like I was trying to create that gestural movement, but put it on the artwork and have the gesture and the drawing take place on the form. And I thought that I could give it that movement that way. And the image is again of that Jericho painting. It's the mounted imperial officer. And I just kept coming, you know, I was also coming to his other painting called The Raft of the Medusa, which is, you know, I thought a lot about that painting. If anybody knows what that painting looks like, it's basically, it's like a topical painting, meaning that, like, there was an event that took place, and he was kind of commemorating that event in this painting. It's one of the biggest oil paintings in the world. And it depicts these people who have been, they were in a shipwreck, and they're on this kind of raft that they've made, and half of the people are dying on the shipwreck, and then the other half are kind of surviving, but they're riding this big wave, and in the distance you can see a ship that could potentially save them, and they're kind of waving like a shirt to try to get their attention. And it's a very, like, sensual but also really dynamic painting. It's very geometric. There's all these, like, ropes and things tying together. So I was thinking a lot about that painting, but I didn't want to put The Raft of the Medusa as the image in there. So I was thinking of his other work, which dealt with kind of war and these images, and chose that one. Just because I still think it's just like... I didn't have a good close-up of the image, but the way I drew the horseman was kind of an absurd, like, appropriation. I thought to make his face just kind of like, it still has the attitude that he has in the other one, in the real one, but it's a little bit more goofy and a little bit more graphic. And then some of the other things on the lower part are like other appropriated artworks, like... that stick with the typography on it is similar to a Ronnie Horn, and, you know, the artworks is, like, similar to a certain kind of, like, abstract artworks. And I just thought that I could stack all of these things together in this really precarious stack. The problem with the photographs is that you don't get any sense of, your relationship to the size of this thing. Like, that was actually pretty big and had... it had an unsettling feeling, like it might collapse, but it doesn't really have that feeling in the photos. It just looks a lot more sturdy. And believe me, it wasn't that sturdy. And that's where I'm at. Questions? What's up?
When you talk about making the sculpture and not wanting to just make sculpture drawings,
so yeah.
Rather than making a collision, can you talk a little bit about how you want the sculpture, what purpose you want it to serve if it isn't a collision with things?
Wait, can you say that again? Sorry, it's hard to hear you.
If it isn't a collision of objects, you know, with art historical references or references to your personal life coming together.
Right.
How did you want it to function in the room? Is it more about the space that it sits in? Are you talking more about the space in it?
Yeah, well, it in one sense, I think I was trying to put too many of my ideas together, and I don't know whether I succeeded or not. I'm still, like, debating that out. But I did want to, like, once you start making a three-dimensional thing, you can't help but get into all of those formal things about space. And I think I got really seduced in what I was making, and I started to think about like, how much I loved that these things were just leaning against this wall. And I started thinking about the relationship of like, the human body to the size of this thing, which doesn't translate at all in the images, because it just reduces this thing down to this, like, small size. But I did start to get a lot more into formal concerns. I think now that I think back on it, it would have done more of what I wanted if it was pulled away from the wall and it wasn't necessarily leaning on the wall. But at the time that I started it, it was important to have that concept of it leaning against the wall. Yeah?
You keep on talking about formal elements in your work, but yeah. I was wondering whether political events had an impact. Since you have so much Cyrillic script, and I keep thinking, and references to these constructivists, even though they're
downplaying them. I'm not down... You mean political events,
but
like what?
I was thinking about the falling apart of the Soviet Union and so many frequent references to.
There's no, like, well, I mean, I'm glad the Soviet Union fell apart.
No, but that's, I just keep on talking about formal elements dictating your works or the composition of your work. Is there also a thematic or a political?
There's no, like, political agenda that I have. I'm just responding, and I wasn't because there's a lot of times the Cyrillic is a way for me to use typography as a form. Like, when I use letters that we all, like, I mean, I understand the Cyrillic, and I know what it is, but I wanted it at times to stand in more as graphic design and be like, because when you start seeing letters that you recognize out of order, you start to try to make a sense of what that word is. But the majority of people who are looking at the work here in the audience I was speaking to, they're going to look at that and they're just going to see it as text. And I also wanted the text to be kind of gibberish and illegible. And that was more of a formal thing than any kind of response to anything Soviet or any kind of, like, political ideology or agenda that I might have. I hope that answers your question. Sure.
So in your early works, it seems as though all your works evoke a very New York feeling to me. Now I teach in Richmond, but now I'm back in New York, and I notice my response to the city is, first, everyone's response is that there are so many people, but in this vast city with so many people, there's also an emptiness, which is what I sort of sense in some of your sort of early works. But then I see all of this, that you're bringing in this dynamics into your later works, and then the sculpture is almost... I'm imagining it in large size, almost threatening because it fall apart.
Yeah.
So,
well, the early works was kind of lonely time. I mean, I don't really know what to tell you. Like, that's really what was going on.
Even the dynamic works are, you don't have any people in them. So the emotion seems to be confined to, like, the brush strokes on the elements. hands on the bars, but there's still a geometric purity and formality to the work.
Right. Well, I mean, I was trying to think about, like, how can something that's geometric evoke an emotion? Like, how could you do that? Like, that's almost absurd. It seems absurd when you look back at art history because, you know, a lot of minimalist artists were trying to bleed any kind of emotion out of it. Like, but because of my own personal relationship to those artworks, to that kind of art growing up, my own personal experiences, I kind of I found like them to be kind of moving and interesting, which is kind of weird. I mean, maybe that's weird. I don't know. And the one way to do it is how to you know, you make this geometric form, but how you draw it starts to evoke that feeling. That's what I realized. Like how I can draw it. And I started to think about like how could I you know. Well, yeah, it's just basically like how I draw it will then evoke that feeling, basically. Yeah?
Could you talk a little bit about your optimism? I was kind of struck by, you know, how you were talking about maybe the utopian of the constructivist. And you were kind of talking a little bit about...
Yeah, sorry, when I talk so much about, like, the images in a row, I get totally lost. So it's a lot easier for me to handle it this way. The optimism that I was thinking of is basically, like, I found that artists in the 90s were taking a very ironic and kind of bitter point of, I'd say ironic more than bitter, but a kind of ironic attitude towards art history and artwork before their own time. It was just this kind of like everything to them was kind of a joke, and there was no, like the idea was that nothing will ever be new, and that since nothing is ever going to be new, everything is fair game, and it's all just kind of like, it's all really easy to kind of... to kind of use it in whatever way you want and make fun of it. And I think something that defines the generation of my artists, my generation of artists, is that something we're all thinking about is how to... we have a much softer relationship to art history. Like, we really enjoy it, and we sincerely love it. I sincerely love it, and I feel like other... And I'm not... I don't approach it with this kind of disdain. I approach it with like, wow, that's really interesting. Like, how could I look at that and think about that? And how could that be, how could I look at that and respond to it and make it contemporary? And I guess what brought me to that was when I was in college, I went to the Met. I used to go to the museum all the time. And, you know, and MoMA, the old one, small one. And, I used to go there all the time, and I found, like, you know, I was into the artwork, and I, you know, I was doing it. I was an art student, and I was kind of like, hey, this is, it kind of felt like something I liked to do, but also something I was supposed to do. Maybe kind of, but like my parent, you know, it's kind of like going to church or something. Like, you kind of, you feel like you're supposed to go, and you don't really want to go, but because your parents want you to go, you go. It was like that kind of thing. And then I went into the Chinese section of the Met, and was just, like, blown away. You know, I was looking at these Yuan Dynasty scroll drawings and paintings. And I just was so moved by them. And they didn't feel like some kind of an... Sometimes when you look at things at the Met, it's like an artifact from another time. It could just be from another planet. Like, it's like this little, like jade face. And you think, like, God, like... I don't even know, like, somebody made that 2,000 years ago, and I don't even... And here I was, like, looking at these Chinese, like, scrolls, and I was thinking to myself, like, I really respond to, like, what's going on in here. And, like, I was really reacting to it and connecting with it and really responding to the things that were going on and the treatment of space and really, really loving it and not really knowing why. And that's kind of... I started making long, like, really long kind of scroll-like drawings in school. And I realized that this is going to sound weird, but by playing video games that my mind had kind of become accustomed to a scroll format, because the video game character would start on the left-hand side of the screen and he'd get to the end and then the screen would move over. So I was just walking along looking at this scroll, and I realized that I was kind of like being entertained the same way I was entertained by like a really bad video game. And that kind of like connection that just kind of made something that was like an object that was made hundreds of years ago seemed so present and relevant in my life, and just really shook every kind of everything, every bit of irony out of my soul. So that's the story on that. Hey, Sarah.
Did you find the transition from drawing sculpture difficult?
Very. A lot longer than I would have liked. And it was very difficult because I was making sculpture in undergraduate school and was really into it and was doing it all the time. And then making the transition, like everything about making sculpture is difficult. I mean, just living, first of all, the whole aspect of just living in New York and having a studio big enough to make the sculpture and to make the thing and afford it, and basically like, it's one thing to make the sculpture. It's another thing to store a bad one. And so it's kind of like, you know, that's kind of a problem. And then like just all of the issues that I forgot about, like, you know, when you're making a drawing, you're thinking about like the, you know, your sensitivity to the line and the line size and the quality of the line and the texture, but it's all on one surface. It's all just one thing. And then all of a sudden you start making the sculpture and you realize like every object's got all these surfaces and then these different things together, and it starts to become way more complicated. And I was really surprised at how complicated it was going to be and how hard it was.
The skull,
you know. The skulls? Well, the little skulls are supposed to be funny. I guess I wanted to add a human element. I know this is going to sound weird. I didn't want the place to be totally dead. But I put a skull in there. But I mean, also there's like, you know, there's a tradition of like the memento mori kind of skull, you know, putting a skull in a candle. And there's a certain tradition of that, an art historical tradition. And I kind of, definitely in those early works, there's a kind of loneliness that was there that I put the skull in. And then in the collisions, those kind of like graphic skulls, I just kind of thought that they were, I mean, really what happened is I drew them and they went into that book of images that I have and I recycle. And I just like these really like funny, goofy skulls are kind of, they really appealed to me and thought that they kind of had a feeling, they evoked a feeling of a person, but in a caricaturized way without caricaturizing a person themselves.
I have a question about artist intention.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, I might be just seeing something.
I'm not going to correct you from here.
But I think that when I look at these collections of images, that formalism is like the great equalizer. It doesn't matter if it's like something that was made 2,000 years ago or 20 years ago. Formally, if it works, it works together. And I would assume that the original intent of the artist that made the art that you're referencing is of secondary importance. So it's of primary importance is how it all just fits together in this broad idea of art history. So what I'm asking is do you feel your intention is important?
Well, yeah, but it's a balance of intention. But I think the formal concerns are important to our generation of artists in a way that the previous generation discarded them or thought it was like not really important. Like they had an ironic relationship to craft. I think that craft in these drawings is of equal importance, but it's not craft in and of itself. Like, if it was only craft, they could just be these abstract drawings. Like, my intentions are obviously important.
I'm not talking about craft. I think maybe I'm talking more just this humanistic idea of art making that's just, that's like its own, it's its own reason for being. Like, for example, if you look at the constructivist images, they had a very particular and strong intention.
Right.
That you stripped it out of, you stripped their particular intention. Their intention does not become the intention of your drawing.
Right.
So I'm wondering if your own, like your own, if your own intention in the drawing is important for that drawing as it exists in history, or if somebody 2,000 years from now took your drawing.
Well, I think that's always going to happen. I mean, you know, like that wouldn't bother me. I mean, it kind of happens. I mean, that's just the way the nature of things are. Like, people kind of steal certain formal aspects from one another. But that, my intentions are obviously important, but that kind of, like, there's levels of relevance. Like, there's a relevance to the drawings that's going to apply to everybody in the room now because we're looking at the drawings now. And, like, I made them now. And there's that relevance. And then there's a relevance, I think formal concerns just last longer. Like, you'd have to, like, when you look at an old painting, you say, wow, that painting is, like, really beautifully made, and you study the formal aspects of it. And then when you really want to know the intention of the artist, you kind of have to study the time around with which that artwork was made. I think that's just going to that's just the nature of what's going to happen anyway. Don't ask me a tough question, man.
But